Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Have you ever stopped to wonder why some people tend to carry fat around their waist, while others, well, they accumulate it more around their hips? And perhaps more importantly, does that difference actually matter for your health in the long run? It's a surprisingly profound question, really, especially when you think about the global picture. A staggering 1 in 4 adults is currently overweight or obese. But here's the real kicker, a fact that might completely shift how you think about this. The specific location of that fat on your body, it can dramatically change your risk for serious diseases. Get this. Studies have shown that having a higher hip circumference, you know, more fat around the hips, can actually reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by around 40%. Last, your risk of myocardial infarction, that's a heart attack, by about 10%. That's not a small difference at all. So while we know overall body fat is a health concern, the distribution of that fat is a crucial yet often overlooked factor, despite its huge impact on our well-being or current treatments. While they're surprisingly limited when it comes to precisely modifying both overall obesity and these specific fat patterns, but today we're diving deep into some truly groundbreaking research that just might change how we think about fat, our genes, and maybe the future of metabolic health. This is where it gets really interesting.
Absolutely. And today we're really shining a light on the incredible work of Nicholas A. Baia, Ilknur Sir Erdem, Samvita S. Venkatesh, Melina Klausnitzer, Duncan S. Palmer, and Cecilia M. Lindgren. And of course, their extensive team, primarily from the University of Oxford and the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard. Their research, which came out in the American Journal of Human Genetics on October 2nd, 2025, significantly advances our understanding of the precise genetic and molecular mechanisms, the ones that orchestrate both overall obesity and, critically, where our bodies decide to store fat. It's fascinating stuff.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Let's dive into the context a bit more. We're not just talking about the global obesity epidemic affecting, like you said, a quarter of adults. This deep dive focuses on a critical, often missed nuance: the type and location of fat storage. It's not just about how much fat, but where it ends up. It's almost like a biological postcode lottery, isn't it? Where your fat decides to live has big consequences.
Indeed, it's a fascinating and really crucial distinction. It's a well-established fact in medical science that higher central adiposity, that's the fat around the waist, you know, the apple shape, significantly increases your risk of serious cardiometabolic diseases. We're talking things like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, stroke, the major players. And what's even more striking is that this risk holds true even independent of your overall body mass index, your BMI. So you can have a technically healthy BMI, but if you carry most of your fat around your middle, your risk profile is still elevated.
And in stark contrast, you mentioned the fat around the hips and thighs, the pear shape that actually seems to be protective.
Exactly. Protective. Which raises this important question that has puzzled researchers for a long time. Why? Why this profound difference? What drives these distinct fat distribution patterns and their vastly different health outcomes? It's not simply a matter of diet or exercise, although obviously those are vital. This research really underscores that fat distribution is highly heritable, meaning it's significantly influenced by your genes. We're talking about a substantial genetic component here, up to 56% heritability in women and 32% in men for waist-to-hip ratio, even after you account for BMI.
Wow.
It's a huge genetic fingerprint on your body shape.
Okay, that's a powerful indicator that our genes are playing a major role. So if genes are so influential, what have past studies told us? Where did our understanding stand before this paper?
Well, past studies have definitely been illuminating. They've shown that genes affecting overall BMI often seem to be linked to the central nervous system, particularly the hypothalamus in the brain, which acts as the body's kind of master controller for appetite and energy balance.
Right, which explains why many weight loss drugs target those brain pathways.
Precisely, like the GLP-1 agonists you hear about. But the genes influencing fat distribution, like that waist-to-hip ratio adjusted for BMI, they tend to be active within the adipose tissue itself, in the fat cells. But here's the challenge. Until now, comprehensively studying how these specific fat distribution genes functionally impact human fat cells, well, it's been incredibly difficult. And this limitation has really hampered our ability to develop targeted therapies. Therapies that could, say, encourage fat to redistribute from the risky waist area to the more protective hips. It's a massive gap in our therapeutic toolkit.
Right. So this team faced a really complex puzzle, connecting these genetic predispositions to specific fat storage patterns, and then crucially, understanding the biology at a cellular level. How did they even begin to tackle such an ambitious problem? Sounds like it needed something pretty innovative.
You're absolutely right. They didn't just look at one angle. They took this brilliant multi-pronged approach. It was both broad, looking across populations, and incredibly deep, looking inside cells. Think of it like using a powerful telescope to scan the vast genetic landscape of humanity, and then for specific interesting spots, zooming in with a super-powered microscope to see exactly what's happening.
Okay.
This integrated strategy is what makes their work so powerful.
So tell us about that telescope part first. How did they sift through all that human genetic data? That must have been enormous.
It was huge. First, they essentially became genetic detectives. They sifted through the protein-coding parts of our DNA, the exome, from this massive cohort, over 402,000 European ancestry participants in the UK Biobank. Just a phenomenal resource. And they weren't just looking for common genetic differences, the ones many people share. They specifically focused on rare variants, those genetic tweaks that show up in less than 1% of the population. They then meticulously linked these rare variations to 9 different fat traits, everything from overall BMI to really precise measures of where fat was stored, distinguishing between that apple or android shape and the pear or gynoid shape using advanced body scans like DEXA scans.
Okay, so they found these rare variants linked to fat traits. But identifying a variant is one thing. How do you know if it actually does something damaging, if it actually breaks the gene?
That's the critical next step, separating the signal from the noise, right? Once they had their list of rare variants, they used a whole suite of powerful computational prediction tools. Think of them as sophisticated AI filters, tools like Lofty, CAD, Revel, and Splice AI. These algorithms predict if a specific variant is likely to break a protein or significantly mess up how a gene functions. This rigorous filtering process helped them narrow down thousands of variations to a much smaller, manageable list of highly promising genetic candidates, the ones most likely to have real functional consequences.
So they had these strong genetic clues from hundreds of thousands of people, but it's one thing to find these correlations in big data sets and quite another to prove they actually cause something biologically. How did the team bridge that gap? How did they test these genes in the lab?
This is exactly where the wet lab experiments come in, making that connection between gene and function undeniable. For a select group 14 highly promising candidate genes identified from the genetic analysis, they moved into the lab using human white adipose tissue cell lines. And this is where that revolutionary CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing technology really shines. It allowed them to precisely knock down or essentially silence these specific genes in the fat cells. Basically, they turned down the volume on each gene to see what happened to the fat cell's behavior, directly testing the impact.
And how did they actually measure that impact? What were they looking for when they silenced the gene?
Good question. They first meticulously confirmed the gene knockdown worked, using techniques like RNA sequencing and RT-qPCR to make sure the gene's activity was really reduced. Then, crucially, they measured the effect on lipid accumulation, basically, how much fat the cells stored. They used a special fluorescent dye called BoDIPY.
BoDIPY.
Yeah, BoDIPY stain.
Yeah.
This dye glows brighter the more fat is stored in the cell, giving them a clear, quantifiable measure. This systematic step-by-step approach, from huge population data to computational filtering to precise gene editing to functional measurement, allowed them to connect genetic insights directly to cellular function in a human context. It provided that crucial mechanistic evidence.
All right, so after all that rigorous genetic detective work and the precise lab manipulation, what were the big discoveries? What did they actually find? Any headline results?
The results were genuinely fascinating. They offered both confirmation of things we kind of suspected, but also some really exciting new insights. They identified 19 genes where rare damaging variants were significantly associated with fat traits at an exome-wide level.
Exome-wide, okay.
Which means these associations were really strong, standing out across all the protein-coding genes they looked at. High confidence findings.
Tell us more about some of these star players, these 19 genes. Any familiar names pop up, or were there some real surprises in there?
Well, among those 19, some familiar names definitely emerged. Genes we already know are crucial in metabolism. For instance, PPRG. It's known as a master regulator of fat cell differentiation. It basically tells stem cells, okay, become a fat cell now.
Right, a key player.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And INSR, the insulin receptor gene. Central to how our bodies respond to insulin, manage glucose, no surprise there. But here's where it gets particularly exciting. They also found novel genes, ones not strongly linked before, like SLTM and COL5A3. These were newer kids on the block, so to speak. They also observed something really neat called a monotonic allelic series in genes like COL5A3, INSR, and PPRG.
Monotonic allelic series, what does that mean?
Think of it like a dimmer switch for the gene's function. The more damaging the variant was predicted to be, the more it dimmed the gene's light, the greater its effect was on the fat traits. A clear dose-response relationship.
I see.
It really shows just how crucial these specific genes are for controlling fat storage.
Okay, so a clear dose-response effect and new genes identified like SLTM and COL5A3. Did the genetic evidence only come from these rare variants, or did they look at common ones too?
Not at all, and this is a really important point that strengthens the findings. They found a strong convergence between the rare variant evidence and common variant evidence, the genes they pinpointed through rare variants. They were also highly prioritized by methods looking at the combined effect of common variants for overall BMI and body fat percentage.
So different lines of genetic evidence pointing to the same genes.
Exactly. And even more powerfully, some of these associations, including for SLTM and MC4R with BMI, were replicated in a completely independent and diverse cohort, the All of Us research program in the U.S. That replication across different genetic data types, different methods, and different populations significantly boosts the validity of their findings. It tells you this is likely real biology.
It's clear that genetics are playing a major role here, but our bodies aren't uniform, right? Men and women store fat differently, things change with age. Did the study shed any light on those kinds of differences?
Yes, and this is a critical detail highlighting the personalized nature of these genetic influences. They specifically looked for sex and age-specific effects, and they found them. Some genes acted quite differently depending on biological sex, or they influenced the age at which obesity tended to develop. For example, INSR, PD3B, and PLENUM4 show significant sex differential effects on fat distribution. In the case of INSR, the insulin receptor, they even observed opposing effects on waist-to-hip ratio between sexes.
Opposing effects? Wow.
Yeah, meaning a variant could increase waist-to-hip ratio in, say, men, but decrease it in women, or vice versa. It's a remarkable level of nuance.
Mm-hmm.
They also found five genes, including the well-known MC4R and the newly implicated SLTM, where rare damaging variants significantly increased the lifetime risk of developing obesity or led to an earlier age of onset. So these genes can affect not just where fat is, but when obesity might develop.
So the genetic insights are robust, fascinating, showing specific genes, dose response effects, sex differences. But as you said earlier, finding a link is one thing, proving it's functional is another. What happened when they actually manipulated these genes in human fat cells? This is where the biological rubber meets the road, right?
Absolutely. This is where the in vitro experiments provided that direct functional validation and, frankly, some truly surprising results. First, as a sort of positive control, they knocked down PPRG. And just as expected, based on its known function, this significantly decreased lipid accumulation in the cells.
Okay, so the system worked.
Exactly. A great internal validation showing their assay was doing what it should, but wait until you hear this. They also found that knocking down SLTM in the lab significantly reduced lipid accumulation.
Wait, SLTM? The one where damaging variants in people were linked to higher BMI?
The very same one. So we have this really intriguing discrepancy, right? A gene that, when broken or less functional in the whole person, associates with more body fat overall. But when you silence it directly in isolated fat cells, those cells store less fat.
Huh. That's a mind-bending clue right there. Hints at something more complex going on.
Definitely hints at a very complex role, perhaps involving communication between different tissues or systems not captured in the cell culture dish.
That's genuinely surprising, particularly that SLTM finding. What about the other genes they manipulated in the cells? Did they see effects there too?
They did.
Yeah.
On the flip side, knocking down COL5A3 in the lab significantly increased lipid accumulation.
Yeah.
And they saw similar trends, though maybe not quite reaching full statistical significance, what we call nominally significant for increases with XOC7 and 3FP10 knockdown as well.
Okay.
So these experiments provided direct, measurable evidence. These genes aren't just statistically associated with fat traits in populations. They appear to directly influence how our individual fat cells store lipids.
Which is pretty profound.
It gives us a concrete biological mechanism, a potential why behind what we see in the population-level genetic data.
So the big picture takeaway from this groundbreaking work, it seems to be that it's not just how much fat you carry, but where it decides to settle. And now, Thanks to this team, we're finally getting a detailed genetic blueprint of why that happens. This research sounds like it could hand us a new roadmap, maybe, to design treatments that could actually reprogram where our bodies store fat. What does this all mean for us, for the future of metabolic health?
It's incredibly exciting, I think, because it provides such a robust model for identifying high-confidence therapeutic targets. You know, genes like PPIRG are validated, which reinforces its known importance. But the novel finding for SLTM is particularly thrilling. That paradox, it's knocked down decreasing lipid accumulation in the lab, despite damaging variants linking to higher BMI in people, is just a fascinating puzzle. It suggests a potential avenue for developing, say, small molecule drugs that might decrease fat storage, but perhaps through an indirect mechanism we still need to fully understand. Maybe it affects signaling to fat cells. And similarly, COL5A3, it's part of the extracellular matrix, the scaffolding around cells, and it influences how fat cells differentiate and mature. Targeting that could be a whole new approach. And then genes like XOC7 and the TRKE10, involved in the cell's machinery for lipid uptake and synthesis, these all offer brand new potential targets for interventions. We're potentially talking about a level of precision that moves beyond just broad appetite suppressants. We could maybe sculpt where our bodies store fat for better metabolic health.
This sounds like a massive leap forward. But as always in science, no study is perfect, right? What are some of the limitations here, the caveats we need to keep in mind, and what are the next steps for this kind of research?
That's a crucial point, and the researchers themselves are very clear about this. One key limitation is that the primary genetic discovery was done in individuals of European ancestry within the UK Biobank. So a critical next step is to ensure these findings generalize to other diverse populations around the globe. We need to know if these genes play the same roles everywhere.
Right, diversity is key.
Absolutely. Also, while the in vitro cell line model, the cells in a dish is incredibly powerful, but getting at the mechanisms within a single cell type, it obviously lacks the complexity of a whole organism. Doesn't have the constant chatter from hormones, nerves, other organs.
The endocrine and neural inputs, yeah?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which brings us back to that SLTM paradox we discussed. Could SLTM, despite showing those discordant effects, actually be involved in some kind of neurohormonal pathway that simply isn't present in the cell culture?
Makes sense.
That discrepancy is a really rich area for future research, demanding a broader, more systemic view.
So moving forward, we'd want to see not just more diversity in the genetic studies, but also perhaps more complex in vivo models, like animal studies maybe, to really understand these genes in the context of a whole organism.
Precisely. Incorporating improved methods to identify rare variants, maybe even exploring the role of non-coding variants, the DNA between genes that regulates them, that will be vital too. And as you said, exploring these specific genes in whole organism models is going to be critical to fully understand their therapeutic potential, and importantly, to figure out these apparent discrepancies, like with SLTM. This multi-level approach, from huge populations down to single cells and then back up to whole organisms, that's really key to developing truly effective and safe treatments down the line. Ultimately, this deep dive truly reveals that combining large-scale human genetic data with these precise functional experiments in human fat cells is just a tremendously powerful way to uncover the fundamental drivers of obesity and fat distribution. We've highlighted specific genes, the known PPRG, the paradoxical SLTM, the structural COL5A3 that directly alter how fat cells store lipids. And this really does pave the way for more targeted therapeutic strategies in the future. Understanding not just how much fat we have, but where it's distributed and which specific genes control that distribution.
That's absolutely essential if we want truly personalized and effective metabolic health interventions.
That's a really powerful summary. So, building on that, what do these findings truly mean for the future of personalized medicine and metabolic health? How might these gene targets realistically change how we approach weight management, perhaps even going beyond current broad interventions like GLP-1 agonists?
Well, you can sort of envision a future, maybe not tomorrow, but down the road, where we can tailor treatments not just to someone's overall BMI, but to their unique genetic fat distribution profile.
Right.
If we can develop therapies that, for instance, specifically target SLTM pathways once we understand that paradox to influence lipid handling, or maybe modify COL5A3 activity to gently encourage fat storage in more metabolically favorable depots.
Uh-huh.
What? We're talking about a level of precision that we've only really dreamed of until now. It moves us from a kind of one-size-fits-all approach, which often has limited success or side effects, towards truly individualized metabolic health strategies.
It could mean preventing type 2 diabetes or heart disease, not just by focusing solely on overall weight loss, but by strategically, gently altering a person's fat storage patterns towards a more protective profile, guided by their unique genetic makeup. That, for me, is the really transformative potential here.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.